Over the Mall is brought to you by Soccer America. Soccer America, the soccer paper of record. Go to socceramerica.com and sign up for your subscription today. More information on all our sponsors at overtheball.com/sponsors.
Hey, this is Bob Lee, and you're listening to Over the Ball with Kevin Flynn, the world's game from an American perspective.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Over the Ball with Kevin Flynn and Dave Gallego. Today on OTB, we catch up with freelance soccer journalist John Bolster. He's written for all kinds of publications. I don't know if you call them publications anymore, but online services, sportsillustrated.com, Howler, and MLSsoccer.com. So, Davey, so today John's going to just sort of help us sort out all the great football that's coming our way this summer. And boy, there's a lot of it. Got Copa America, the Euros, the Olympics for the men and the women. So a lot to chew on, Dave. What are you up to?
What am I up to? Other than watching a lot of soccer? Not much. Doing the band thing. How are you doing with your one-man play?
My play opens up again this weekend at the Odyssey Theater in Los Angeles, Fear of Heights. So if you're in listening range of Over the Ball here on the West Coast, come on out. It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, it's got good reviews. It's been nominated for some awards, so I'm pretty happy about it. But I got to say, I've been watching soccer all day yesterday and today. There's something about watching midweek soccer, Dave, that I'm sitting on my couch on a Thursday and a Wednesday, like kind of feeling like
I feel naughty. You feel naughty?
I got to get my shit together. I got to get my life together. My God, I'm loving football, but it's the middle of the day. I'm like, it's ridiculous. But anyway, Liverpool put up a pretty good win today. They always seem to dig themselves a bit of a hole. But anyway, some fun soccer. I love it. And
They went down early, right? I think they went down within the first 2 minutes of the game, right?
I was with a weekend. Today was Sheffield Wednesday. They went down right away. Yeah, you're right. They were dominating play, and then they went down, which they seem to do a lot. But they actually scored more goals than any other Premier League team in the last 15 minutes. And, boy, they needed it today. So it was.
And how'd they do today? I'm not going to lie. I didn't watch it.
Yeah, 3-1. 3-1. So they're at the top of the table. I think 2 points over Arsenal. But I'm happy there's a race at the end of the year with the Premier League. So
me too. Hey, speaking of Arsenal, did you see the Man City-Arsenal match?
Did not see that one.
Okay, well, it was a 0-0 game, but it was the most watched Premier League match in U.S. history with over 2 million viewers across NBC, Peacock, and all the NBC platforms. So I think it's the first English language match to surpass 2 million viewers. So pretty good.
Davey, math, man, waking us all up. I got to get out my number two pencil to hear about that.
Full disclosure, I work for NBC and Peacock, so I have these statistics readily available at any given time. But that's pretty damn impressive, though. 2 million viewers?
That's really impressive. I don't want to blow smoke up the NBC butt here, but you guys do a great job. It's pretty amazing. So it's been nice. And the audience continues to grow, obviously. And what I think is great is these people know the big games. They know it. And so we're coming down to the end of the season. It's a tight race. I think that result really helped my boys at Liverpool. But anyway, I just have to say my girlfriend just kept walking by me on the couch yesterday and today going, really? Really, dude?
I know the feeling. My wife looks at me scornfully on Sundays when I'm watching 3, 4, 5 NFL games, especially when the games are 9:30 in the morning on a Sunday.
You know, it's funny. When I was playing college soccer, we'd have training all week. Our only day off would be Sunday. And my roommate and I would always say, you know what? We'd watch football. NFL football, we'd watch it all day, because you watch the morning game, and then by the time you're watching the West Coast games, there's your day. It's shot completely.
I love it.
I actually stopped watching NFL football back then, and I'd watched every Sunday all day with my father growing up, but I had had enough. And you know what's interesting? We talked about it when I was on that cruise ship where all the foreigners were talking to me about how little action there actually was in a football game. So
you mean an American football game?
An American football game, yeah. So anyway, I'm glad.
Well, because back in the VCR days, I would tape the games, and then you fast forward through the commercials and everything. You could be done with a game in 15 minutes.
Right. The comedian Billy Burr, a friend of mine, he actually says he records all the games and then just zips through them all.
Billy Burr's an animal. He watches. He's the only guy I know that watches more football than me.
Yeah, he watches a lot of sporting events. So I wanted to talk a little bit about this controversy with Corbin Albert's social media post.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. It's not funny, actually, to be that tone deaf to post something like that, sort of hateful LGBT stuff that her pastor said in a sermon. Doesn't seem like the works of Jesus, but apparently, you know, what is she thinking? I'm a comedian. I can't say those sort of things. So the team's come out not against her, but against her comments, which it's really tone deaf. And she's young. She's a youngin', so maybe that's what it is. We'll chalk it up.
Yeah, but it's still a shame. I mean, common sense has to come into play at some point. And if that's the way you feel, which is fine, you can feel that way. This is a free country. But keep your mouth closed. These are your teammates.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And that they've, like I said, they've come out and spoken against it. But, you know, it's funny, you know, this whole woke stuff and, you know, what you can say, what you can't say. I do a whole bit on stage about how my daughter always – you know, gets mad at me for using something that's like, whoa, wait, you know, I didn't know. And one of the things that I said to her was, oh, I got gypped. And my daughter freaked out. She's like, Dad, that's a derogatory term towards gypsies. And I'm like, what? I didn't know that. So
Kev, are you kidding right now?
No, I'm totally serious. And
God, gypped.
I heard her. And then I did a show and the guy came up to me and said, well, that was kind of offensive. My wife is half Roma. And I'm like, well, but it wasn't offensive. I said the word gypped. My daughter told me it was a derogatory term towards gypsies. And I said to my daughter, I was sorry, right? So that I didn't know. And so I'm like thinking, what part of that is offensive? You know? So it's ridiculous. I also tell you, like, you know, they got the LGBTQ and that's queer. And when I was growing up, you couldn't say that. Now it's in there. You can say the word, you know, conversely. When we grew up, we were able to say the word midget, and now that's, you can't say that. You have to say, you know, small person of little stature, whatever. So anyway, I think it does get confusing, but this case seems to be pretty cut and dry. It was sort of, what do they say? It's denouncing being gay and transgender. And she's only 20 years old. So, I mean, like, really, why post any of that stuff? Like,
you know, but that's not a good excuse if you're only 20 years old, because now there's so much awareness around it. Like if you said, well, she's 90 years old, you could say, okay, well, that was something at the time. But now they should be more educated about that stuff.
Right. And especially, you know, these women have fought so hard, and it's really been a great year for women sports wise. I mean, what's going on with the Final Four, and not just Caitlin Clark, but just women's basketball. It's definitely gotten to another level, and it's so exciting to watch. And I don't think it always was. I don't think that's sexist, but I think some, you know, the Family Guy and everybody used to go make jokes about women's basketball, but man.
Yeah, having one fan in the stands.
Yeah, gay, go.
and that's why she makes $14,000 a year.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. And I had a buddy of mine, you know, he was a college basketball player, he's a basketball coach now, and he said her one of the best pure shooters he has ever seen, man or woman. He said it's just amazing, quick release. She gets her shot off so quick. So it's, I don't know, it's good. So hopefully,
I think I'm sorry to interrupt you there. I think Ice Cube has some league that he offered her $5 million to play in some offshoot basketball sort of tournament or league. I don't know what it is, but he just offered her $5 million. So yeah, you're right. The sport is on the map, absolutely.
Oh, good. All right. So, looking forward to talking to John Bolster. I played.
Oh, good. What kind of response is that? Oh, good. Very patronizing. Oh, good.
Like, I was distracted. I really wasn't listening to you.
Calm down, little boy. Oh, that sounds great.
No, I just saw that our guest has arrived, so I
want to
sign off a little bit and get on there. What did you say again, so I can have a proper response?
I just said you're an outstanding comedian, and I look up to you like a father figure, and I'm just happy to be associated with you.
This is good. I'm glad I'm listening because.
And then you just blew it off. You're like, okay.
I played with his brother in the indoor league. He played for the Milwaukee Wave, and we loved playing against Milwaukee because when you were leaving the city in the bus, they would sell you cases of beer, whole cases of beer in a bar. So it was really great. So all the action happened on the bus ride home. Everybody hitting it. So, okay. So we'll wrap it up here, and then we'll come back with John Bolster, soccer journalist, to talk about all the games and all the tournaments that are coming up this summer. You're listening to Over the Ball.
All right, joining us now on Over the Ball, soccer journalist John Bolster. Bolst, welcome back to OTB. How are you, man? Who's talking to that?
Doing well, Kev. Thanks for having me. Dave, good to see you.
Hey, what's up, Johnny?
Hey, John, so we were talking before you got on about all the things that are coming this summer, the Copa Americas, Euros, Olympics, the men and the women. So we figured you'd help help us break it all down for us. So what are we looking for this summer? What, as an American soccer fan, what's the best case scenario? Starting with Copa America, I guess.
Yeah, this is a real summer of soccer deluxe edition we got coming up. The Copa America is going to be hosted on U.S. soil starting in June, running into July 14. The Euros are kind of going to run parallel to that. I would have appreciated if they could have staggered it a little bit for our viewing pleasure and convenience, but that's the way it is. And then after that, later in the summer, July into August, we've got the men's and women's Olympic tournaments. But for the Copa America, this is a huge tournament for the U.S. It's a big test for the team, getting it, you know, ahead of hosting the World Cup in 2026. And I think it's a big test for Greg Berhalter, because this would be sort of the last, you know, exit ramp if U.S. soccer wanted to make a change, or if he just wanted to establish himself as the guy to lead the team in 2026. This is the moment, because, you know, the U.S. Has had some inconsistency, but they really have established themselves as top dogs in CONCACAF. We saw in the Nations League, they had a little bit of a hiccup against Jamaica, but then they really took care of Mexico pretty handily, beat them pretty comfortably. So now this is an opportunity then to kind of go to the next level, and they're going to, if things go well, they're going to run into a bona fide world power. So it'll be a great test for them in that respect. And they also have a very favorable, a couple things working in their favor. The fact that they're hosting, the group that they landed in was pretty useful for them. They've got Bolivia, Panama, and Uruguay. And the schedule also really favors them, because they open with Bolivia, then they get Panama, and then they don't get this sort of heavyweight of Uruguay until the third game. And, you know, you're thinking, Bolivia should be very beatable. You know, unless you're playing in La Paz at 12,000 feet, you can beat Bolivia. That's their sort of super fortress secret weapon when they play in South American qualifying. They play at home in
like
the mountains. Yeah, it's even higher. So they, you know, they should take care of that. And then Panama is an opponent that they know very well, and they will be favored in that one. So if everything goes to plan, they'll have 6 points going into the game against Uruguay. And then, you know, Uruguay would probably also have 6 points. So that game could be a gentleman's draw, or, you know, the result won't be as crucial.
Well, it'll be crucial, because if they do move on to the next round, then they're going to presumably face Brazil, which I'm assuming will be first in their bracket. So,
yeah, that's a good point. So you're right. So they match up with Group D, I think. So that's Brazil and Colombia would be the favorites in that group. So they'd probably prefer to get Colombia over Brazil. But you never know how those things could shake out. You know, if Brazil finishes second and the U.S. wins their group, you know, then winning the group is not such a great thing in that scenario. But as I said, they want to make sure they take care of business in those first two games. And then the Copa works. After the group stage, they go directly to a quarterfinal. So they'd have a quarterfinal knockout game against, no matter who, they're going to get a competitive team. And I think if they win that, yeah, then they'll be in a semifinal. And then, you know, that's the minimum accomplishment required for this group.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. You know, first of all, we're assuming a lot from those first two rounds with the Bolivia and the Panama. Teams that used to be difficult for us, now we're supposed to win. But you see with what happened with Jamaica, you know, they score so quickly, the game plan goes right out the window. A lot of people were calling for his head, Greg Berhalter's head at that point. Yes, a big win in Mexico. But I think over the past couple of years, guys, we could all agree that we have sort of passed Mexico. It'll never feel that way, because we always sit at the edge of our seats when we play Mexico. We just don't want to lose to them so badly. But I think we have established a dominance there that's got to hurt for them on a national level. And I don't know how much Berhalter has to do with that, other than the march of time here and the amount of players that have been developed over the years. We have depth now for the first time. I don't think we have particularly a system that we play, and that could be a criticism of Berhalter. So we're assuming all goes well, and Uruguay, the game with them is a toss-up. We don't know. But what are you hearing? Are there any grumblings about Berhalter? That Mexico win certainly got him off the hot seat, but have you heard any grumblings about him perhaps being a little bit in trouble?
Well, certainly if you go on soccer Twitter, U.S. soccer Twitter, they've got the pitchforks and shovels out for torches, I should say, for Berhalter. I personally am a little more neutral on Berhalter. I think he's done some things really well and some things less so. You know, his biggest strength probably has been recruiting for this team. You know, he brought in Serginho Dest. He brought in Yunus Musa. He's done an excellent job bringing in dual nationals and convincing them to play for the U.S. and buying into the U.S. culture. I think that's a big strength. I think the team really likes him. Yunus Musa, Christian Pulisic, and others have come out on the record saying he's the best guy for the job. They like playing for him. They're motivated. Now, if a couple of results don't go their way, that becomes something that counts against him. You don't want to keep him on just because the guys like him if they're not getting results. But you have to say they're getting results. So for me, Berhalter is, I think this is a make or break situation in the Copa America. If they succeed at the Copa America, I think he's locked in until the World Cup.
I agree.
If not, you know.
Yes, but, and of course, Klopp is going to be available, so perhaps they can be the
You keep bringing honestly, up Klopp like you have inside information. He ain't coming here, buddy.
I'm a Liverpool fan, and here's my theory on it. You know, look, the level of skill at Liverpool is unbelievable, but the players love playing for Liverpool, and, you know, you got Salah tracking back and checking, and it's like he's got his stars working hard. I love the way they play. I mean, they just all work hard for each other. And I think the American team, boy, they're just young athletes. They are skilled as well, which, you know, usually we had one or the other. Maybe now we have both sort of. And I think, you know, that sort of high pressing, attacking, especially in a tournament, you know, it would be effective. So, no, it's just I'm kidding, basically. But wouldn't it be great, you know?
Kevin, actually, on a serious note, that's one of the problems with firing Berhalter. Like, who's ready to step in? You know,
we
don't have to get a Jose Mourinho, or we're not going to get Ancelotti. You know, Klopp is available. I don't have any inside information on it, but it seems to me like something that he would be interested in.
And he would bring back the whole German reputation after the Jurgen Klinsmann debacle.
Exactly. Yeah.
You could say that.
Das ist no gut. Das ist no gut.
You must play in Europe. You must play in Europe.
Yeah. Like, the fishmonger wants to hear how you played that week. And if you didn't, it's not good. So, all right. So the Copa is a lot there weighing on, you know, not just the team, on our country's continued development upward in this world. Because look, yes, we do are the top dogs in the region right now, but man, that's just not enough, and it's not going to be enough to satiate most of the soccer public. And so perhaps Berhalter, yeah, this is a test. And you know, he's the type of guy; he's a competitor. This is a good thing. You know, he wants it. These are the reasons you coach to get in these big games and deal with the pressure. Now, let's talk about the Euros a little bit. I always love watching that in the summer, but my girlfriend thinks there's just too much soccer on because I don't have a life, you know. Get a job, dude. Get off the couch. But the Euros are coming up. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, she's really going to be on you this summer with all the soccer on TV. Mm-hmm. The Euro final and the Copa America final are on the same day, Kev, July 14. Dave tells me you're hosting a double feature watch party. Is that correct?
I will be running the Nantucket Comedy Festival, and I'll be dealing with a bunch of drunk comedians and then drunk patrons and sponsors. So that's my big thing. The problem is I've got so much work to do that week. It's like I'm going to have to sneak in my hey, who's hosting the show? I don't know. He's in the back watching soccer right now.
So that tournament, it runs roughly parallel to the Copa America. Should be a terrific event. For me, if you want to talk about favorites, for me, the number one favorite is France. They're just filthy rich with talent. It's unbelievable. You know, Kylian Mbappe, Ousmane Dembele, Kavaminga, Tchouameni, Antoine Griezmann. You know,
that's easy for you to say.
Jean Bertel with the France.
Yeah, Johnny Croissant.
Yeah, man, he was.
Did you see what he did? Frankie Louvre.
You see what he did to us there, Dave? He started pronouncing the names, which is my.
He's making shit up right now. I don't trust this guy.
You know, I would love to get both of your opinions on this because I always go crazy when the announcer who's speaking English suddenly goes into a Spanish accent. And Dave, you can speak some Spanish, but it's like they'd be like, "The it's going to be a great game today in Mexico." Hey, well, the person speaks Spanish. His name is Jorge Alvarez. That's like, no, his name is George Alvarez. He's speaking Spanish. And they're like, well, you know, I speak Spanish and his Spanish name, I need to pronounce it correctly. He's like, no, you don't. You're speaking English. If you're going to do that, pronounce the Russian names with the German name. It drives me nuts. It's my pet peeve. Anyway, I'll get off of that.
I love when you go off on tangents. This is fantastic. I love that.
Oh, man. How'd you like to be a nun trying to teach me in third grade?
Well, the best is when they're speaking Spanish and then there's no Spanish equivalent in English. So then they're speaking this beautiful Spanish word. And then they're like, in beautiful Linden, New Jersey.
Yeah, exactly. It was
Kevin, one of my things. I actually slipped in a couple of false names in that list. You guys didn't spot it. I figured, you know.
Well, Pepe Le Pew, I called bullshit on that one.
I smell something, Pepe Le Pew.
That's all the time we have today. Thanks for joining us.
Go ahead, Bolt.
This has been Duolingo with Kevin Flynn.
I'm going to pronounce all the Serbo-Croatian names in their accent, you know, because that's the proper thing to do. Like, shut up. You're in America, Mexico. I just remember listening to NPR one day because I was, you know, I'm very smart. And there's like, they were like.
How do you spell that, by the way?
There was fierce fighting in Haiti. Jean Bertrand Aristide. It's like, it's Jean Bertrand Aristide, you asshole. Please, you're not speaking French, you're speaking English. So anyway, I'm getting off.
I've been to the Taco Bell drive-thru with you and heard you say, I want the quesadillas. So, you know.
Quesadillas. We had a guy when I played in college. He was Russian, and he had come over. Simon Ostrov, great player, and he spoke with a thick Russian accent. And so we're coming back from the Hartwick tournament, and we're in the van, the team, and I was driving most of the way. Then all of a sudden, Simon got in, and he started to drive, and we pull up to a toll booth, and it's full of guys. You know, it's full of the team, right? And I'm in the back now, and I go, hey, Simon, you know, get a receipt. You know, make sure you get a receipt. And he's like, okay. Pulls up to the thing, goes, yeah, could get a receipt? And the woman goes, what? She goes, a receipt? She goes, what? And he goes, receipt. And I go, he wants a receipt. And she goes, oh, why didn't he say so? And he's like, that is fucking what? I said a receipt. My God, why can't this woman understand me? What is wrong with her?
Like, it sounds like he took a ride with Inspector Clouseau. Hey, John, you know what? I should have asked you earlier. Is it John Bolster or is it Voltaire?
Like Voltaire.
Yeah. All right, let's move on, people. We have a lot to cover. What else we got?
Oh, man. Dave did school marm on us.
Let's go, baby. Come on, lots of soccer to talk about.
The Olympics. Let's talk about that. The men and women's team. The Olympics are going to be this summer as well. And, you know, boy, actually some controversy. The women have been in the news a lot over the last couple of years. The guys have kind of kept their noses clean. Well, I guess you had the Gio Reyna.
The guys keep their mouths shut. That's why. The guys keep their mouths shut.
But the women, the PR, man, not so great.
On top of that, the guys, as far as the Olympics go, have not qualified since 2008. So that team is kept out of the fray involuntarily.
They look good, though, John. They look really good in some of these practice games. They look fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. And on top of that, they're playing against teams that will be in potentially in their group. They just had a friendly series against Guinea and France.
Yeah, France. They were down 2-0. And that's my dog. My dog wants to chime in. He's a big French fan. they were down 2-0 against France, and then they came back in furious fashion. And the quality of the game, the level of play was fantastic.
Yeah, that was a great result. And France is in their group at the Olympics, as is New Zealand. And then the fourth member of their group is TBD after a playoff between the African champion, which is Guinea, and the Asian Federation champ, which is not determined yet. So we don't.
They played Guinea too. They played Guinea too and won 3-0 and looked great there as well.
They played Guinea. They beat them 3-0. So those are encouraging results. You know, as tune-ups go. There are a few wrinkles for the men's Olympic tournament. For one, it's an under 23 tournament. The roster size during COVID in the last Olympics, they increased it to 22, but it looks like it's going to be 18 for this tournament. So that's going to make some really hard choices for the coach. And you're allowed, well, two things. Clubs do not have to release players for the Olympics. So all these guys are with professional clubs and, you know, the federation has to work with them to determine whether they can get these players because the tournament falls during the preseason for a lot of these teams. So that's going to be something he's got to sort out. And then there are three overage players allowed. And that's an interesting wrinkle.
Oh, wow, that's strange.
You could bring in some wild cards, some ringers. And, you know, there's no way of telling which way the coach is going to go with that. But it's an interesting thing to consider.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. I think there's some unique teams involved with the Olympics, qualifying teams. I think Israel qualified, and I think the Dominican Republic qualified. Is that accurate?
I think the DR did, I believe.
Crazy, right?
Not sure about Israel, but it wouldn't surprise me. The Olympic tournament is all, you know, it's a funny animal because some of the world powers, their players at that age group are like, you know, super important to their clubs, so they're not going to release them. So, you know, you get teams that are, they're still going to be good, but the balance of power shifts a little bit for the Olympics because of player availability questions.
You know, I was very happy to hear about Dominican Republic because, you know, classically they don't really play the game that much.
It's a baseball country.
Yeah, totally.
And curling, of course, and curling.
Curling. But when I was living in the Upper East Side of Manhattan, I lived next to this one apartment complex, and a lot of Dominicans became my friends, and it was so funny. Every one of them apparently played baseball with Manny Ramirez back in the day. You too? You're 87 years old. How could that have been? I don't know. Anyway, but that's good news, too. So, and then the women, what's the difference with them now? Because, yeah, first of all, I think there's a lot of considerations there. You can, you know, young players who, you know, to do a tournament preseason is not so bad because you play yourself into shape a little bit. I think you get out of those first days of camp, which sort of is a way where you meld with other players and get comfortable and kind of get going. But it's a great way to maybe play younger players that aren't playing. And that whole three extra players, you know, older players, that's just this weird. That's
strange.
A marquee thing where you can pull a couple of marquee players that are already recognized and pull them in there. But, you know, 21 years old now, 23, that's you're playing on the main side. You know, you're playing on the full team at that age. So it's interesting. I would almost like to see the Olympic team be 18 and under or 20 and under.
No. Yeah, I would too.
Well, that FIFA has a U-20 World Cup, so, you know, the Olympics doesn't want to step on their toes, or FIFA wouldn't allow them to do that. But even the U.S. has this issue. Like, Giovanni Reyna and Yunus Musa are both age-eligible for the Olympics, but they're not going to be part of it because they're going to play in the Copa America for the U.S.
Hey, John, I'm going to give you a name, and then I want you to give me a name in terms of who you think is a player to watch. There's a guy, Jack McGlynn, which I think is a dynamo. I really enjoy watching this guy.
Philadelphia Union. Yeah, I love him. Great left foot, excellent passer. Maybe not elite top-end athleticism, but really, really good player. I think teams in Europe are interested in him, and I wouldn't be surprised if he made a move in the next year or two. And he's very likely to be a big part of the Olympic team.
Yeah, I enjoy it. It's great to have him on the squad. Give me a name, somebody we should be on the lookout for
Griffin
on the Olympic squad.
His name is Griffin Yao. He's playing in Belgium right now. Did really well in these two tune-up games with Guinea and France. Cade Cowell, who is in Guadalajara.
Yeah.
Very athletic, surfer dude-looking kind of guy from California. Could make an impact. I think the area that they're softest in and where you may see an overage player come in is center back. There's been talk maybe a Walker Zimmerman, maybe a Mark McKenzie comes in there to provide leadership and you know, strengthen the spine of the team. Another player who is someone to watch is Duncan McGuire, a striker, plays for Orlando City. He came out of Creighton and lit up MLS. I think he scored 15 goals. And then he got interest from Blackburn in the English Championship. I don't know if you guys heard about this story.
The Rovers.
The loan move with an option to buy was all set. He went over there, and Blackburn literally, instead of hitting submit on the transfer process, hit save, and the deadline passed, and the deal fell through.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
That sounds like us all trying to get on the same call here in the morning. Yeah, technical stuff. Who's the kid? I can't remember his last name, but Kayvon. I think it's spelled C-A-V-A-N. I just saw some.
Kevin Sullivan. Yeah. Kevin, he's 14 years old.
I know.
He's an unbelievable talent, but I don't think he's ready for the Olympics. But he is part of the Sullivan family, which is a famous Philadelphia soccer family. I think their grandfather coached in Villanova. Their dad played somewhere. I think he played professionally. And there's Quinn Sullivan, who plays for the Philadelphia Union right now. And Kevin is 14, and he's playing for Philly's third division, Philadelphia Union 2, which is a professional team.
Yeah.
And Man City just paid $2 million for him.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. 14 years old, imagine. The only job you could have at 14, it used to be you were a singer in the band Menudo. You know, now apparently you can make $2 million.
No shot at that now. Kick you out at 14.
Oh, damn. You're out of the running. You hit puberty. You're out. You're out of the band, boys. Hey, so, Bulls, do you have any intel on the controversy with the women and this whole the LGBTQ sort of post that was put out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is – so the women are at a crossroads. They're sort of moving a new generation into the team.
Yeah,
they're bringing in a new coach. Emma Hayes starts on June 1st, and they are getting two huge players back from injury in Mallory Swanson and Kat Macario.
Yeah,
two of their most potent offensive weapons. They're coming back in. They actually have a tournament this weekend in the She Believes Cup. They're playing Japan this weekend, and then
I don't believe it. That.
Well, only she believes.
I think that this situation with Corbin Albert that you're talking about, they're going to have to deal with it this weekend in the locker room.
Yeah.
Mallory Swanson was asked about it at a press conference recently, and she said, Lindsay Horan and Alex Morgan both put out statements in the wake of the controversy.
Yeah.
And she said, she basically referred all reporters to what they said. That's what they said, and we're dealing with this matter internally. Which I think is a smart way to go.
I agree.
But
yep.
I think it's going to be, it's going to be awkward this weekend, literally this weekend playing in this tournament with, she has emerged as a really helpful player for the team. And it's going to be an interesting locker room there. It really is.
Look, young people make mistakes. And so hopefully they learn from them. If you're talking about alternative lifestyles or person's lifestyle, period, in that locker room, those very people exist. They're your teammates. Yes. And, we both know, the press and all that stuff, that's one thing. But if you've stirred up something in the locker room, that's where it all begins. That can make you very uncomfortable as a player. I want to go back a little bit. Really excited about this whole, the women's basketball tournament. It's like women's basketball is really sort of carrying the day these days. And it sort of lends to the argument that, like, if you put good product out there, regardless of what sex it is, people will come and watch. And now, having said that, the coach that's about to take over the U.S. Women's team, she's actually criticized the U.S. in this past tournament, basically saying there's a lack of creativity there. And if any of us, and if any of us ever saw, my dog heard that alarm, John. Anyway,
we have an earthquake here, guys.
Oh yeah, John, where are you, John? Because we had that 4.8 magnitude earthquake over here. Where are you?
I'm in California. The earthquakes.
John, where are you?
I'm on the Upper West Side.
Oh, all right. So you felt it crazy, man.
Yeah.
Did you guys really have an earthquake in the
UK? Oh, yeah. Yeah, about 2 hours ago. Oh,
wow. And they just had one in Taiwan. So maybe the global plate tectonics are taking place. That's maybe we'll have no tournaments this summer. We'll have nothing.
The ground was angry that day, my friends.
Oh, boy. Hey, so Bulls, to get back to the women's team, you watch Spain play this in this last World Cup. my God, they were playing a different game all completely, you know, playing it out of the back with composure. You know, it was just, you know, Jenny Hermosa was like, I was watching like, oh my God, the playing with her back to the net, freeing up space, doing things that, you know, you really don't see with our women. You know, usually knock it wide, knock it in, knock it out, you know, move forward, run onto the ball. And I think they do lack a little bit of creativity. And I think that's what's kind of, that's the next step. They need to do that. And because teams have not only caught up, they've passed them in those areas.
Yeah. Well, they got the right coach in Emma Hayes. I think Emma Hayes is definitely going to steer the ship.
Yeah. And also Kat Macario, Emma Hayes has singled her out as one of the most creative players in the world. So her coming back in is going to be a huge boost. And she plays for Hayes at Chelsea. She's been out nearly 2 years and scored in her first two games back and had an assist in her third game. So, you know, it seems like she's in good form, and it'll be interesting to see what she does.
She's got a real feisty attitude. She doesn't take crap. In the last game, you see that she had some words with the opposing team coach. She knows what she wants, and I think she's going to be the real leader to bring us to the next step or bring us back to where we were.
Kev, can I make two more points about the Corbin Albert situation? If we have
time. John, you're cut off, buddy. Let's get back to Pepe Le Pew. Your thoughts on Pepe Le Pew?
No, I mean, just to your point about she has to know that the culture of U.S. soccer involves an LGBTQ element. And it seems so reckless to post these things. You know, you mentioned she's young, but that, like, it's not like she's unaware of that. Or
if anything, she's more aware because of this generation. You can't say anything without being canceled. I mean, if it was a 90-year-old person, you say, okay, it is what it is.
You can't say that.
And then the other thing is one of her posts was particularly nasty. So, you know, Megan Rapinoe got hurt in her final game of her career. She like rolled her ankle.
Yep.
And somebody posted something to the effect of God taking time out from saving lives to make sure Megan Rapinoe hurts herself in her final game. And she liked that. That's like really over the line. And that provoked a response from Rapinoe in the aftermath of this. But to me, that was the most reckless and really mean-spirited post. And just to put a button on it, Megan Rapinoe wore number 15 for the women's national team. Corbin Albert wears number 15.
Mm. Oh, that's it. Mm. That shirt's going to make her gay, maybe. I'm not sure. I don't know. You know, one of the big things with sports and your teammates is tradition, having each other's backs, watching things. No. On a serious note, like, boy.
I'm still laughing at your 15 comments.
It's not me, Mom. It's the shirt. It's the shirt. Gay. I'm not.
Why did the coach give me this number? I like boys.
I give her that number on purpose. Are you kidding me now? Exactly. So, God, yeah, some of her teammates are gay. It's unbelievable. And you got to go back in that locker room. Man, just why can't what was Martin Luther King Day the other day? Why can't we just love each other, people? You know what I mean? And I love you guys, the old over-the-ball team.
I like you, Kev. I like you as a friend, buddy.
Now, come on. It was Martin Luther King Day. Give me a hug.
Adorable. But we're so adorable at this age.
Eight Balls, thanks for getting us up to date on all that. Don't be a stranger here and Over the Ball. We love your vast knowledge of all these tournaments and all the other things and going on in the world of soccer. So a lot to check out this summer. Appreciate you getting us up to speed on it all. John,
my pleasure.
Thanks, pal. Always great catching up with John Bolster. The Bolster family, they were all from Princeton, New Jersey, a whole bunch of athletes, men and women, all Americans in multiple sports. So, and John was the youngest. So I think he's one of 13. You believe that?
Yeah. Oh, well, speaking of Bolster, they really bolstered up their count, their kid count. Oh, my God. See what I did there? See what I did there? That's pretty good.
We saw it. My God. Yeah, but some great stuff. He's always up on top of stuff. You know, he used to be on when I was on Sirius XM FC, and he always, you know, he brought it, man. He always, I don't know how some of these people have the time to follow everything, the minutia and the names and the stadiums and the altitudes and just all the considerations that go into it. So
all what do you stuff, all the stuff that we should know.
We should know. I know. Well, there's only so much to know. You can say this like a, you don't know what's going on in Ligue 1. Oh, you idiot. Why not? Well, I haven't had a chance to catch up on my French soccer. I kind of keep a little bit, but there's too much to keep up with. So we try to narrow it down here.
Well, listen, I'm good with the cosmos if we want to just focus on that. I don't think there's any other podcast that does that.
All the time.
So I'm excited this weekend. It's sort of a little rematch. Liverpool plays Manchester United. I think that's going to be a great game. Obviously, Manchester United knocked Liverpool out of the FA Cup, and there'll be a grudge match there. They scored at that last minute. I predict early dominance from Liverpool.
I predict that it will surpass 2 million viewers for Peacock.
Oh, there you go.
That?
A company man is what you're
doing.
Get
a little plug in there.
Get your plug in there. So, all right, Davey. Well, good. Good talking to you. It was great talking to John Bolster. That's all the time we have, everybody, on Over the Ball. Please give us a like, give us a listen, wherever you get your pods and where you download them. It really makes a difference. All right. For Dave Gallego, I'm Kevin Flynn, and we'll talk to you next time on OTB.
Have comments or questions? Give us a call or shoot us a text at 727-914-9998. 727-914-9998.